Welcome to Making Our Way Forward, a podcast where we share compelling life stories and learn from the experience of everyday entrepreneurs. At NACI, we celebrate diversity and invite you to join the conversation as we talk to entrepreneurs and leaders from all walks of life. We hope that by telling their stories, we bring you inspiration, empower you to take action, and ignite entrepreneurship in your community. Welcome to Making Our Way Forward podcast. We're bringing an international guest to the program today, and it is my pleasure to welcome Bart Idash to our listeners. So, Bart, how are you doing today?
Lucky, I'm doing fantastic, and it's a real pleasure to be on the program today.
It's really nice to meet you again. We actually got to know each other working on the publication of a book series, which we'll get into, and you have a really interesting background, and I'm going to just jump right in, Bart, and have you tell us a little bit about yourself. Where did you grow up? Where did you spend most of your time? What shaped the person that you are today and the work that you're doing?
Well, I was born in Prince Albert, Saskatchewan, which is in Western Canada in the prairies, although I didn't spend a whole lot of time there. My parents, my father, who was a Hungarian refugee who fled the old continent after World War II, and my mother, who was born in Montreal, herself to Hungarian immigrants, relocated us from Western Canada to the United States. After a short stop in South Carolina, we settled in the desert southwest of the USA in Phoenix, Arizona, and that's where I spent my formative years through high school. I attended university in the U.S., in Washington, D.C., and in the Midwest, and worked for a time after that in Washington, D.C. But for much of the last three decades, I've been out and about on different continents, in Europe, in Asia. I've spent most of the last 4 years in Washington, D.C., working with my employer for most of the last two decades, the Asian Development Bank, which promotes poverty reduction and sustainable development in low-income and middle-income countries in the Pacific region and in developing Asia. I'm now in Montreal, where I and my family relocated a handful of years ago, and I'm working independently on a variety of projects, including some focused on strategic foresight and futures thinking.
Yeah, I'm really eager to dig into that because that is such a timely focus area now as we're all making our way forward through the pandemic. And as you and I spoke about a little earlier this morning, Canada seems to be opening up a little bit slower than the US and maybe other parts of the world. But it requires a lot of flexibility, right? A lot of patience and really thinking about things that are in front of us. But before we get into all of that, I'd love for you to tell us a little bit more about Asian economies and, you know, maybe specifically, you know, in your three decades plus of work, you know, what did you find to be the most impactful? What were some of the strategies in terms of trying to get assistance to, you know, to communities and to families, thinking about it maybe through an entrepreneurial lens?
Sure. So the Asian Development Bank, again, where I spent most of the last couple of decades, is an intergovernmental organization. It was set up by governments in the mid-1960s to provide financing in what was then a very poor region of the world with terrible social indicators, hunger, lack of basic infrastructure and the like. And its model has generally been to provide loans and grants to central governments. Now, over time, that model has evolved and there's a lot more work with the private sector. And among the other developments has been greater engagement over the years with grassroots organizations and communities, local governments, civil society organizations. And so when you ask what's been effective, it really it depends a lot on the country and the particular economic sector where investments are made. But one thing that became clear over time at ADB, and I'd say probably more generally in the development world, is the need for greater involvement of local communities, how getting local buy-in and acceptance of development projects can make a big difference in their success, where there is local support. And I mean, not just at the central government level and the capital, but in the community, in the region, province, what have you, that can make a big difference as to whether a project gets the uptake, the support, the monitoring, and any needed, say, maintenance and evaluation. One of the things, spaces I got involved in during my ADB career was not only working with civil society organizations, but also social enterprises. So ADB did a bit of work on promoting social enterprises and helping to identify financing for them. And social enterprise is a subset of the whole entrepreneurial sphere, basically private sector initiatives with a social or environmental orientation and broader purpose. These started sprouting all over Asia. I mean, there's a long history there, but in more recent times, they've taken advantage of market openings and tapped into interest at the community level and people interested in sustainable development to really make a difference in people's lives, combining business processes, a market orientation, but at the same time with a mission that was not just about the bottom line in terms of finance and profit, but also what kind of impact, how they were changing people's lives. So I was very proud about ADB's grassroots work supporting social enterprises, even though it's an institution that that has a niche primarily on bigger infrastructure projects.
Yeah, and I think to your point, I think really communities and empowering people, not just giving them things, but teaching them and developing that sense of self-efficacy. I know in the United States, obviously, as we join hands with people around the world, we're in a rebuilding phase here as well. And there have been people that have been disproportionately hurt by the pandemic and economic decline. But at the same time, there have been people, African-Americans, people of color, who've sort of been left out of a track to even joining the middle class. So that's kind of heightened in awareness. And I think what was interesting as I got to know you and just reading your book, which we'll talk about in a little bit, is I think thinking about how to empower people with how they think about opportunity and giving them resources that maybe they didn't have before and connections and networking. And Bart, if you could speak a little bit about in terms of the bank and what you were talking about social enterprises, or if we talk about it here as social entrepreneurship, what kinds of investments would you see that maybe communities or even individuals would need to really get on their feet or to get something up and going? Can you give us a sense of what that could be, or maybe an example of that?
Sure. Well, maybe just to highlight just how important entrepreneurship in general is to the Asia Pacific region. And we see this through the social impact it has helped, it has provided in lifting people out of low-income circumstances, out of marginalized conditions. There's been increased financial inclusion, better access to finance by low-income earners, and opportunities created through fintech, just as a few examples of entrepreneurship. So in terms of projects, one of the biggest barriers to entrepreneurial success in developing Asian countries is access to capital. If you're just starting out and you're a small player, maybe a family-owned micro enterprise, the banks aren't really lending to you. So how do you get credit? How do you get capital? And how do you develop basic management skills for successfully and sustainably running a business? And so some of the successful programs that ADB and other donors in the Asia Pacific region, as well as governments, have been supporting, get at this capacity issue in terms of training, in terms of opening up lines of credit, And where these are done in partnership, say between a big development institution like ADB and governments and local governments and financial institutions, banks, these have often had a big difference in people's lives. So, and there's also, look, there's also a gender component to this too. So often it's harder for women to get an entrepreneurial initiative off the ground for various cultural or legal reasons. So a lot of the projects that ADB backed included provisions to, for example, sensitize bank lenders to the needs of women-run businesses and creating more opportunities in that segment of the community and helping, therefore, to expand social inclusion and address gender gaps that exist.
Yeah, that's an excellent point about equity, looking at it through the lens of many different things, gender, you know, race, all of these different things. But the bottom line and the way that we see it at the National Association for Community College Entrepreneurship is if you equip people with education and support, and it may not necessarily be a college degree, but it's some type of mentoring or certificate and give them some degree of access to capital, it can make a tremendous difference. Just to share with you one bit of information, as we have been scaling up our Everyday Entrepreneur Venture Fund, we found that in the neighborhood of about $5,000 to $6,000 of just an outright grant can get an everyday entrepreneur cash positive in 3 months. And we've tracked a number of individuals. These are not necessarily high tech businesses, but they might be an automotive repair business. It could be a number of different things. But it really does open up that possibility, but people have to be equipped with financial knowledge and sort of that ability to do things. So I know I wanted to get to this because this is something that I think is really fascinating that you write about in your book. So I'd love it if you tell us a little bit about your book and then really zero in on strategic foresight and the next big disruption, because it is exhausting, I will tell you, to even think about another disruption as disrupting as the last 18 months have been. But I think your book really offers a great resource. So maybe tell us a little bit about that. What is it? And then, you know, how might people take what you've written about in your book and apply it to their own lives and communities and businesses?
Sure. Maybe I'll start with why I wrote this book. So it was during pandemic times, and reflecting on my long association with Asia, being based out there, working to promote sustainable development, the region, it's a region of the world which is becoming increasingly important in all aspects of global affairs, in all spheres. So economically, culturally, in terms of research, education, technology, Asia leads in terms of electric vehicles, production of solar panels and semiconductor chips, technological innovations. I think of being on the subway in Seoul, Korea, where you don't have any problem with internet access and people are streaming games and programs, whereas in a similar subway system in, say, the U.S., you may be struggling to access the Wi-Fi. So just to say that Asia is becoming a much bigger part of global affairs and having greater influence in all aspects of the world. And so looking at that and looking around one, when you're working in Asia and you've seen the development over the last decade, two decades, you get a real sense that the future is in this region, that this is where things are happening. The economic growth rates blowing away the growth rates in more traditional, established high-income Western economies. And so I think it was this connection of that region, which suffered like the rest of the world, a setback with COVID, but will certainly bounce back with its creativity and large population and growing middle classes, really got me thinking more about the future. And so 4 years ago, while still with the Asian Development Bank, overseeing our knowledge management team and providing strategic direction and how we would manage as an institution our intellectual assets and learn from our experience, we brought in an expert on futures thinking and strategic foresight to share some ideas and to have a workshop for interested staff. And that began a process at ADB of incorporating strategic foresight more into the bank's work. Now, what is strategic foresight? In short, it's a systematic and a structured way of using ideas about the future to better anticipate change and to prepare for different eventualities, looking over the medium to long term. So I would distinguish strategic foresight from something like prediction or forecasting, which sounds similar, but forecasting depends more on the use of historical data or existing trends, and maybe just for the next quarter, what is a company's sales going to be, or in terms of government provision of water services, what might demand be next year based on existing trends. Foresight goes a step beyond. It's not trying to identify a single future, a very precise number as to characterize some aspect of life in the future, but rather elaborates different plausible scenarios that are created on the basis of how major trends interact. So in short, strategic foresight helps to gain more information and insights for an organization, whether it's an educational institution, a nonprofit, a company, a government agency, helps to use these ideas about the future and how it might evolve and use those insights to improve strategy and planning for the future and to make organizations more resilient and better prepared for not only crises such as the one we've been going through, but also opportunities. So in short, that's how I came to this this embrace of strategic foresight and wrote this book, which highlights now as we recover from the crisis, from the pandemic and economic crisis, how can we make better plans for the future and be more resilient and more future conscious about our planning?
Well, I think that's important for a number of different reasons. I even think about it from my own perspective as the leader of NACI. And we had a call earlier this morning to ideate on a very large grant opportunity. And should we get it, it could alter the trajectory of our organization. So in thinking about things, sometimes getting something that you go after could be sort of a mixed blessing if you're not clear on where you're headed. And I think that's, for me anyway, that sort of the growth of learning from people like you and other colleagues that we have, Claire Nelson, Dr. Claire Nelson, and the work that she does in futures thinking, because it's also very empowering if you think about it, because if you're just looking at history and the past, and of course, there's complicated stories in there and people sort of debate what actually makes it into the history books. But if you're casting your gaze toward the future, you're really empowering yourself and your team to create that, or as we talk about in our organization, co-create it. So if you're coming to the table with partners, there's this sense of kind of alchemy that you can create things that independently we couldn't do together. And I think for me and the Reset series and part of Changemakers and the work that we did together with Tim Ward was really to come up with a composite of different social and world problems and kind of weigh in on different solutions. So I'd love to hear from you, Bart, also. What are you most hopeful about on the other side of this pandemic? And granted, we've got a ways to go, worldwide till we're on the other side of it. But share with us, maybe looking at it through the lens of how you view opportunity and challenge. Share with us some of your observations or your hopes.
I'm glad you ask it that way, because oftentimes when one uses strategic foresight to develop longer term scenarios, some of those scenarios can be a bit dark and a bit unnerving, because there are, frankly, unpleasant possibilities in the years ahead. But looking at the opportunities, the more positive side of things, I think that's a great way of approaching it. And after all, The future is not written, and we have the opportunity to influence what that future becomes. So as far as, you know, what gives me hope, looking back over the last year, year and a half, that's been so difficult for so many people, we've witnessed surging momentum in the battle against climate change. And in the United States, more concrete action to tackle racial and social inequalities. And human ingenuity has again shined with the introduction in record time of several effective vaccines against COVID-19. I mean, this process of vaccine development used to take many, many years. And within a year or so, we have several different vaccines. And now it's just a matter of getting them out there and returning our lives to something resembling normalcy. So what also makes me encouraged about the future, our efforts to make community colleges even more affordable in America, discussion of a free community college in the political sphere. I have a grown nephew who is making an exciting and bold career change out of sales into nursing. And he's done this during the pandemic, and it's the community college that's given him the knowledge and skills to make this transition into the medical field. Now, the pandemic has hit community colleges hard, but with this vaccine-inspired hope for a return to times of familiarity, removing our mask and interacting once more, I think that prospects will improve for community colleges. For example, people who've deferred their plans will start looking at college again, and workers who lost their jobs will start looking at community colleges to retrain and strengthen job skills to make themselves more competitive. And employers who postpone training will start looking to bring those workers back up to speed. And high school students who fell behind academically will look for classes to get them college ready. So there's a lot in the post-pandemic period that gives me hope based on some of the positive developments in the last year and year and a half, and some trends as we're leaving the pandemic that opened the door to all kinds of possibilities, including the very important role that community colleges play in, among other things, skilling and creating entrepreneurial opportunities.
I appreciate so much that you pointed that out. And I think about that a lot too, the resiliency of the human spirit. And it's really that way of looking almost at the desirability of difficulty, as Malcolm Gladwell wrote about so well, that when you're going through something, it doesn't feel good or it doesn't feel very desirable. But once you can make it to the other side, you realize you've strengthened in certain ways and you become more open to possibility. Even your example of your nephew, one of the things that we love from my team and my office is really the open access nature of community colleges. We've come through graduation season, and typically in community colleges, you'll have a high school student that's graduating with a community college degree because they're dual enrolled. And you might have people in their 60s or 70s. I remember a student one time, she was a nurse, and she was in her 70s and going strong, but she was starting to lose her hearing. So that led her on a path of getting a certification, helping others with that same thing. So I think regardless of what our path is, we never stop learning and collaborating and sharing. And I'm just encouraged, by the opportunity to get to know people like you. I often think if the pandemic wouldn't have happened, my co-authors and I probably wouldn't have written our book. We would have been too busy. We would have been, you know, traveling around the world or traveling at least around the U.S. So this has been a great conversation. Bart, remind us the name of your book and where people can get it. And if you have a copy of it handy, if you wanted to show that or to share with us the title, I'd really encourage people to pick it up and read it and try to think of how they might apply it to their own lives.
Well, the book is called Learning from Tomorrow, Using Strategic Foresight to Prepare for the Next Big Disruption. I'll hold it up here. I'm not sure if that's clearly visible.
It's a great title, and it's also a great graphic. For those who are listening, it's an avatar that looks like a robot that is actually, reading and thinking about the future. So, Bart, thank you so much. I appreciate your thought leadership and your friendship and your willing to share your story with our listeners.
It's been a great pleasure. And thank you so much for the opportunity today.
Thank you so much for joining us. We hope that listening to this podcast will help you to explore the many ways we might define entrepreneurship. Join us every other Wednesday for more episodes as we celebrate opportunity, learn from one another, and grow together. Subscribe to this podcast, connect with us on social media, and learn more about today's speakers at naci.com/podcast. We look forward to making our way forward together with you.
Have you heard about our latest book, Impact Ed, How Community College Entrepreneurship Creates Equity and Prosperity? This is our roadmap for building back better in 50 states and globally. In each chapter, we share the inspiring stories of everyday entrepreneurs and explain how community colleges play a crucial role in their success. Visit us at naci.com/impacted to order your copy now and join us in this work.
Have you heard the exciting news? NACI recently released a new publication titled The NACI Playbook, Volume 1, all about how entrepreneurial mindset sets the new standard for success in communities and colleges. The NACI Playbook digs into entrepreneurial mindset and how practicing leadership with this framework creates an agile culture with space to innovate, co-create, fail forward, and accelerate growth. Entrepreneurship and entrepreneurial leadership require us to lean in, anticipate and recognize trends, manage change, be resilient, take risks, reflect, and rest in the knowledge that anything is possible. Learn from our innovative, insightful, generous network who navigates both challenges and opportunities entrepreneurially as we share what we've learned and how you might apply their experience to your work. We hope you'll be as inspired as we were. Learn more at www.naciplaybook.com.